carry on really long discussions in the comment threads of our posts. We also kind of try to act as a resource. We have all sorts of questions with very thought out and in-depth answers to them. We act as a library, collecting a bunch of different media and links to opposing views and just a general directory of kind of the science and religion dialogue as it exists. Also, we kind of use our web presence as a tool. A good example of this is our Evolution in Christian Faith grant program, where we doled out, or are in the process of doling out, over $3 million in grants to various individuals and organizations. And by using the internet and our online technology, we've been able to reach a truly global audience and get a bunch of applicants from around the globe that we otherwise would never be able to reach.
And as Michael said about the global audience, the biggest thing about being online is that you can bring a lot of these different groups together. One of my favorite kind of nerdy singer-songwriters, Jonathan Colton, once said that the best thing about the internet is that before, every town kind of had those people that were into maybe specific, very interesting things, but there was no way to connect. But now with the internet, you can find these groups of people that might feel isolated, that might feel they don't have the same view on science and faith as others, and you can bring them together kind of as a community to foster this dialogue and to make them feel like they're part of a community that maybe their small town or their church doesn't quite help them with, and maybe they can in turn bring that community back to their church. We've seen success just in our first 3 years. As you can see, we've grown from 2,500 visits a week to about 40 to 50,000 a month. And that's obviously, this is not a numbers game. You're not trying to get the most popular blog or website for science and faith so you can say, haha, we're better than you. But that kind of shows the level of growth that is available here by embracing these very free and very simple tools. We've put up almost 3,000 posts on the site, received over 40,000 comments, and these are all using very free or very cheap tools online to get this information out to very large audiences.
So the real kind of question that we're going to pursue here is, how are we engaging our audience, and how can you use it? So here's a traditional model of engaging a user with kind of your message or your content, and it's very one-directional. And kind of our strategy has been instead to let the audience engage with themselves, but keep it centered and focused around our content. So it's a three-way street here. So now we're going to kind of discuss the tools of the trade, how
right.
we're doing this.
Right, obviously trying to explain the internet in 20 minutes is probably a bit of a challenge. So we're just going to go through a few tools that are free and easy to use that can help you reach audiences. Facebook, show of hands, how many people are on Facebook? How many people think that it's an awful thing that you'll never want to get involved in? Hopefully, no, a couple people. Unfortunately, there are 900 million worldwide users and over 170 million in the U.S. alone. That's a massive audience, and it's an audience that's on Facebook every day almost. It's really to engage these people. A lot of the people, that's how they get their news. That's how they learn about new things. As we say, it's kind of the internet's directory. You're not really a thing unless you have some sort of Facebook presence, especially in the minds of a lot of younger people. And so if you're kind of ignoring this very free tool, it can be difficult to reach that generation. It kind of fosters a generational gap almost. As we said, it adds levels of credibility. It also makes you seem accessible. You can kind of put a visual public face. It's great for a lot of things. You can share content, especially media. Visual things are the best for Facebook. You can run events and contests by kind of connecting to the audiences. Share photos, as we said. It's bad for some things, though, because of the way that things can be shared so quickly. Inflammatory material is not great because it can very quickly balloon into a kind of a PR nightmare for you if you look like you're being too aggressive or if you're saying things that are going to rub people the wrong way. So you do have to be careful what you publish. It's not great for original material because it's kind of owned by Facebook when you post it there, and you're limited to how much you can put in your notes and posts. And it's not great for long and technical material because people are not looking to engage on that level on Facebook. They're looking for more accessible material.
Now, another number two, actually, to Facebook in terms of user base is Twitter. And I'm sure all of you are just as familiar with Twitter as you are with Facebook. It has about 500 million users, and it has it's a very, very targeted kind of approach. If you aren't familiar with it, you're limited to 140-character messages or a photo that can be included in the message. And it's very important to be on Twitter, or at least kind of have a Twitter profile, because that is a way for you to consolidate mentions of your profile. There's a little at sign that you preface before a name, and so you can really consolidate all of the mentions that are already occurring, the conversations that are occurring about you, and bring it into your site and your domain. Also, it's a great way to track trends with concepts that relate to you and maybe not directly to you, but within your field. Twitter is really good for updates and quick announcements. Twitter is all about the here and the now. The way it's sorted is you really just see what is new. You don't really see things that existed long in the past. So it's really good for that kind of thing. It's great for small thoughts and network building, kind of showing who you want to associate yourself with based on who you follow. It's also good for links to deep content. Now, I'm going to contrast that with what it's bad for. It is bad for anything deep in itself. So you don't really want to be describing something that's complex or controversial in a 140-character tweet. But you can link to something, maybe give a quote and suggest someone read further. It's bad for anything, obviously, more than 140 characters. You can take a tweet and span it over multiple tweets, but that's really confusing. It's also bad for long dialogues. Well, you can tweet to organizations or individuals and be tweeted back by them. The way Twitter is structured is the thread of the conversation is very difficult to follow. So it might be great for engagement up to like 3 or 4 conversations or like messages back and forth. But when you start getting 12, 13 levels deep, you're just going to lose everybody.
And one other thing about Twitter is that because of the way you can track other tweets and search things, even if you don't want to post, it's great to have an account and something like TweetDeck. It allows you to search all the tweets at once for a phrase. So, for example, at BioLogos, we have several alerts set up, and every day we'll go through Twitter and say, who said BioLogos today? Who's talking about evolutionary creation today? And you can get clued in a lot of big events, a lot of new articles that are coming out, far faster than you would through conventional means of trying to Google search them or waiting for one of your friends to email you. And then the blog is kind of the more traditional way of engaging online. That's a bit less specific than when we say Facebook and Twitter, because it, at its heart, is really just regularly updated articles. It can be media, pictures, reposting of other things, videos. And there's a lot of different ways to go about making a blog. There are very accessible systems that you can sign up for, like Blogger. If you want more power and control, you can do something like a content management system that allows you to change everything and customize it to your look. That's what we use for the BioLogos website. As we said, it's great for complete control. You're not tied into the framework of Facebook or the restrictions of Twitter or any other social media sites. It's also great for comments and discussions because you're given ultimate power to moderate in your comment threads and set your own ground rules of this is what is acceptable for discussion, this is how not to handle yourself in our comment section. And because it's your website, you kind of have that power. It's also great for consolidating your identity, kind of giving you a visual face. So as we say, it's good for complex thoughts because there is no character limit and you can span things over multiple posts. You can include graphics, figures, design, anything you need to clarify your points. It's great for deeper conversation because the comment sections are tied to whatever post it's in. So, for example, if you're discussing evolutionary creation or an interpretation of Genesis, all the comments will be under that post, and they'll be centered around that content. And it's great for original ideas because it kind of becomes your personal identity on the Internet. It's not so great for an instant audience because when you set up your own blog, it doesn't come with 900 million registered users. You have to work pretty hard to get them to know that you exist, and there are a lot of other blogs on the Internet. And it's also not great for easy and quick engagement. People need to read the post. People need to kind of learn to trust your voice. So it's not instantly gratifying in the way that putting a Facebook post up and then getting 10 likes is. Discussion forums, we've found, is not a great idea. It can be for a certain audience, but the problem with the discussion forum is that imagine having a blog except for anyone can post anything they want, and then it's your responsibility to moderate. And if people post things that are off color and they're on your website, they kind of get tied back to you even if you had nothing to do with it. So it can become a pretty Wild West place pretty quickly. And so we found it better to kind of hold your conversations on blog posts to allow you a little more control and focus there.
Now, what we've basically discussed so far is a lot of ways to communicate that involve text, and text is big because we're all pretty much academics. However, if you are going to be generating rich content, there are some really cool opportunities for you to kind of host and get some visibility. And here are three that we use. They're very distinct from each other. So SoundCloud is great for hosting any audio content. It gives a visual element to it. Users can comment at different points along the timeline. Vimeo is fantastic, especially if you've negotiated some copyrighted materials that you can only post on your website or blog. You have great tools for domain-level restrictions. YouTube is also good. It's not quite as streamlined as Vimeo, but you do have access to a much broader audience that is much more likely to accidentally stumble across your content. Now, we can just go on forever about all the different social media platforms out there. It's, like, literally endless. And so
And the other thing we want to point out, too, is that a lot of that we were talking about in terms of engaging, actually being part of the community, using those tools, even if you have no interest of creating an engaging presence on social media, it's extremely easy. We use a site called AdVis. It's one line of code. It allows anyone viewing your blog or website to share a page in one click. So even if you're not going to engage directly, offering those tools to let other people share your content and giving it the chance to move out to larger audiences through those social media networks, it's a really easy thing to do, and it's a really great way to bring more people into the conversation without a lot of work on your end.
So these kind of involve curation of pages and content and stuff. This is just a one click for people to be able to add this to their own profiles. And so there's, yeah, very little involved in the second part.
And now, once you have your content and you're bringing people in, you kind of need to know how the discussion needs to flow. Obviously, if everyone's saying things at once and there's no structure, it can be pretty frustrating. People aren't going to want to come back and not want to engage, not want to go further. So obviously, content is the biggest thing. You need good content. You can do all the SEO tricks in the world, have the greatest graphic designer, have the most amazing Flash intro, although you probably shouldn't be using Flash at this point in the stage. But if your content's not very good, people aren't going to want to come. So the content could be an article, it can be a video, it can be an image, just a simple question even. It doesn't have to be original all the time, though if you're kind of known as nothing more than a content farm and just reposting other people's stuff, people may not want to come when they can just go to the original source. It doesn't have to be accessible to everyone, but you need to know what your audience is, and you need to know that that content's going to reach that audience. If you're writing for college-aged Christian Science students, it better be something that college-aged Christian Science students can engage with. If it's for postdoctorals, it needs to be something that postdoctorals will be engaged by and know what to do with. So it really depends on what your audience is, but you need that good content there to start the conversation.
Another really great strategy is staying timely. So if you're trying to grab the interest of people, it's really easy, much easier if you engage them with something that they're already interested in. So be aware of what's happening in your field, where the current status of everything is. Be aware of what's happening in the news. If someone's searching for something or it's related, they're much more likely to find it. Be aware of important dates. So if you're coming and entering the holiday season, or for example, you might be it might be towards Good Friday, and you might be looking for content on original sin. That might be something that a pastor might be searching for around that time of year. So if you had that, it might be a good time for you to be posting it towards that point in time. Timely content means a better chance of people in not only engaging but in sharing your content because it's more relevant to others. It's going to mean more visitors and hopefully greater discussion.
The other great thing that we've found is it's good to offer some sort of starting point, especially if the material you're posting is pretty complex and has a lot of branching off points. By offering kind of a place to start the discussion, to focus on one point or one major key theme in the content that you're posting, it kind of allows for more productive, more constructive discussion because they know where to stay. They're not having people straying off to 20 different threads, and then maybe two people think this is the interesting topic, three people think this is the interesting topic. So instead of having 20 or 30 people engaging on one important point, you have small, middle, little groups of people dialoguing back and forth on a bunch of different topics. The blog Jesus Creed does this wonderfully. They always have some sort of discussion call at the bottom of their posts, and it really centers things. And you also need to be willing to engage with your readers. If you have a point and you want to stick with that in discussion, don't be afraid to say this is an interesting topic, but we're really kind of wanting to stick with this. Maybe you can send us a question later. It is kind of your site at the end of the day, and you are trying to control the conversation. And while some people might think that that's being a bit of a meanie, you do want to make sure the conversation stays for the positive.
Now, when you get started, either with a post or with your site or your project in general, one of the most important things to do is build a theme. And the heart of that is knowing what you want to talk about and what you don't. Now, also a great thing that we're actually trying to do at BioLogos is kind of resurrect a lot of our older content that is still wonderful and timeless, but is not necessarily most accessible to the user at the moment. And so it's very important to kind of connect all of your different content because people can get a much better sense of your theme and your purpose and all of your ideas if you connect them all without just looking at what is the most recent. Also, if you can span a complex topic across multiple posts, we have a lot of things that a user just would not read. I would probably not read something that took me 40 minutes on a web page, but if that was brought in form of multiple posts over the course of a week, I'm much more likely to actually follow or at least engage to some level.
And along those lines, besides knowing what you want to talk about, know who you want to talk to. Be honest with who you're trying to reach. You probably don't want to aim at just a general audience right now, unless you have something like Facebook or Twitter or Pinterest or something that everyone's going to just love. It's difficult to reach everyone at once. So you need to know who you're trying to reach, and you need to make sure your content reaches that audience, if not a general audience. And don't try to be all things to all people. Be aware that your content's not going to resonate with everyone. But at the same time, try to make sure your content doesn't anger people unnecessarily, because once you make enemies on the internet, they can make your life rather difficult.
And about that difficulty, it's a brand new frontier. It's a lot of work, too. Really, the kind of philosophy that you need to base your moderation off of is providing both anonymity and accountability at the same time. Without a sense of anonymity, and the internet provides this better than any other venue, obviously, by a long shot. And by providing anonymity, it allows people who are in even a relatively higher profile position, like, say, a pastor or someone, to question their views and really search for truth. At the same time, you need accountability, because you can't have people running off topic or being very argumentative or inflammatory. And so one strategy that we have adopted to use this is we no longer allow people to sign up with their own BioLogos account. They have to connect it with an existing Facebook, Google, Yahoo, OpenID account, and that kind of raises the stakes. If someone is commenting and they're getting out of control and we ban them, it's much more difficult to go create a brand new Facebook and refriend all of your friends and like your likes. And so it kind of provides both of that, while at the same time we don't publish their email or their name or anything. So that's been a really helpful strategy for us.
It's also good to use a little bit of carrot to go with your stick. Reward good questions. If people are engaging and asking good questions and really moving the discussion forward, be willing to respond to them. Be willing to engage with them. One of the beauties of online is that a person who may have no other chance might get an answer to a question they're really asking from an expert in the field. Unless you live in their hometown, they're probably not going to be able to come up to your door and knock and say, hey, what are your thoughts on the historical Adam? But if they can post a question on the site and you become known as a place where their questions will be heard and where they can get good answers, they're going to come back and you're going to build a better commenting community than if you just ban people that are saying bad things and then let the other discussions go without being engaged. And also, you can ignore hostile questions unless they really derail things. If a person comes to grind their axe and no one's engaging them, they might get a little frustrated and not come back. So they shouldn't kind of get the sense that they can come to this site, start trouble, and then have a lot of fun kind of goading everything. But also, along that lines, it's good to moderate for tone and not content, meaning that if someone asks a question that might be contrary to what your view is on your site, don't be afraid to allow that question to be engaged and stand if they're asking it in a very polite and very diplomatic way. Certainly if a person comes in aggressively and says, you're all idiots and you're all heathens or you're terrible, how dare you do this, that comment can be thrown away. But if someone comes in with an honest soul-searching question, you don't want to give them the sense that their voice is not being heard, and you don't want to foster the conspiracy theory that you're not actually there to listen to anyone that disagrees with you.
And a really important point in that also is using a soft touch. You don't want to get the reputation as having a very heavy-handed moderating fist. And so we've implemented a couple strategies that I really like. One is having users flagging posts, and that does not actually block the post or remove it or anything, but just rather reports to us. Another thing is giving users their different statuses. So you can see this individual, this commenter, has a little green dot. They're in good standing. This guy, however, you can see he has a very argumentative post. It's kind of off topic. And so we've warned him. It's turned yellow, and it says that the user's been warned to follow comment guidelines. And that, we found, is really good, because not only are we now not engaging him in starting an argument back and forth, but he's been discredited. So all of his posts now have that. And other users are less likely to re-engage back in the hostility. And so that's been a very important thing, and in general, trying to minimize the amount of times you remove posts or remove comments will help foster a collaborative community.
And then we're running short on time, so we'll just quickly go through building your audience, because obviously you need an audience to have these conversations, to engage with your content. One of the best things you can do is, as we say, becoming part of the herd. Realize you're not the first person to ever pose many of these questions or post these things on the internet. There's a lot of other people discussing it. So find those other voices in your community. Be willing to engage with them and follow those colleagues and kind of be willing to build those dialogues outside your own kind of insular site and bring it into a larger community of voices.
Another big important thing to do is find your niche. What makes you unique? If nothing is really making you unique and there are other avenues for you to kind of express this, maybe get published on an existing site or something, know when to innovate and when to follow. Don't reinvent the wheel if you don't have to.
And then another thing to do is advertising. There's a lot of different ways to do this. The best thing to do is word of mouth. Start with the people you know, your colleagues, your fellow church members, your friends. If you don't know anyone in your area that's interested in the questions you want to ask, maybe online is not a place to ask them, or maybe they're questions that don't have an audience, but certainly begin with that word of mouth. There are other ways to do it, sharing links with other people in the field, and there are ways to purchase advertising. Google AdWords allows you to have advertisements based on certain search terms that people put into Google. Facebook ads allow you to target to a very specific demographic. If I want to reach 24 to 29-year-olds that have gone to college and are interested in spam, I don't know why you'd want to reach them, but you can. You can do that all with their Facebook tools. Banner ads are another way, and obviously there's non-digital ways too. Print, newsletters, church bulletins. So don't forget that there is a world outside the internet, even when advertising your website.
Final thing is really to track your efforts. There's so many wonderful, great tools out there that are free, really easy to implement. And so you can kind of really gauge how you're doing and how successfully you're addressing your audience. A great one is Google Analytics. If you have a website and you aren't using Google Analytics, you should. It's free, easy to sign up. You copy and paste like 3 lines of codes. It'll let you figure out where your users are clicking. It'll let you decide or see where they're coming from, where they're going, where their engagement follows from one thing to the next, where they're leaving your site. You can kind of gauge your demographics by geography, by all sorts of different factors. It's a wonderful thing, free, easy to use. It's called Google Analytics.
It's a great tool. Everyone with a website should be using it.
I do agree.
So essentially, if nothing else, we really hope that this presentation made your way that there are a lot of tools and there's a lot of opportunity online. And I think as we're trying to move the science and faith dialogue forward, this is a perfect avenue. And I think anyone really interested in the dialogue should be making an effort to take advantage of this. And then we have a couple minutes for questions. And that is a QR code. You can scan it with your cell phone and go to a website. Yes.
That was amazing. BioLogos is a premier website for the topic that you're on. And I'm struck by the fact that there are several of you whose lives are dedicated to it. And presumably you get paid. But I've had several conversations in this meeting as I think about, you know, my own issues that I'd like to get a blog on. It looks like there might be some critical mass you have to reach, but it might need a grant for it. In other words, how do you get from I'm a random person who works full time and this is not what I do to I have a website, 52,000 people want to come see? It looks like you could get to a little point where you had 100 people that cared and you could get stuck there. How do you get unstuck?
That is absolutely true. That's one of the big hurdles in anything is exactly how you said, overcoming that critical mass. Really, it's all up to the user, whether it's social media or Facebook. It's an exponential curve as people begin to share and begin to repost. There is no one-size-fits-all answer to that. If there was, I would probably be very rich.
Yes.
But
there's a lot of, especially if you're trying to make a large, like, resource-oriented site. But even for a blog, I think part of it, too, is before starting your own site, try to connect to existing online communities. See if there are blogs already posting about your stuff. Say, I'm interested in this topic. Here are my credentials. I'd love to offer you a few blog posts that link back to my website. Maybe you do that for some sites, and maybe you were at your 100, maybe another 20 or 30 hear about it from that, and it goes a little bit there. We've had some success with Facebook advertising by reaching very targeted groups of people that might be interested at and bringing them into the site. It's slow going. I mean, for our first year, we were kind of stuck at one point, and then it's kind of grown. You can track the events that have kind of brought a little more traffic in, whether it be a mention on a larger blog, whether it be someone picking us up on Reddit or an influential Twitter person. It is difficult, and I would definitely say that having a full-time person helps. But there are ways to get plugged into that community to kind of allow it to grow over time.
Now, technology should not be the stopping point for that, because there's great tools. If you don't know about WordPress and you're interested in this, you should definitely search for WordPress. That's a great tool.
Yeah, it's very easy to kind of get a blog going. But as you say, bringing that audience is the real crux.
Yeah.
Have the young earth creationists found you?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Absolutely. There's a lot of engagement in every direction in the comments.
Both. You know, we've had both positive and negative. We have several very dedicated younger creationist commenters on the site that are very, very favorable, at least for allowing them to discuss, and are very honest in their questions and aren't really trying to be combative. But then we've had a lot of blogs that would pick up our content with very snarky editorials and, haha, look at these people and their crazy ideas. So it's a mix of both. I wouldn't say one way or the other. I wouldn't generalize and say that everyone from one group has been combative, but there's been a mix of both.
Also, we have posts from different perspectives, not even our own. So we get a lot of heat from both sides.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You guys have done a really good job with BioLogos online communications. I love the BioLogos website. It's so easy to navigate and find some very useful articles. And I think what makes BioLogos so effective is that, you know, BioLogos is not just some scientists that are pushing some particular view. I mean, you guys bring in a large amount of expertise through theologians and people like Timothy Keller, and they're so easy to find. When I was looking through the website and I brought up a Timothy Keller article on Dysphoristy Bab, it was really neat to be able to find that so accessible. So I just want to applaud you.
Thank you. Yes.
I feel really stupid, but what is BioLogos and how does it relate to the ASA?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, we had a slide initially describing who we were, and then for time constraints kind of whizzed right past it. I will read the bullet point off the slide, though. BioLogos is a community of evangelical Christians committed to exploring and celebrating the compatibility of evolutionary creation and biblical faith, guided by the truth that all things hold together in Christ. So
Is this a competitor of ASA?
No, we definitely want to work with ASA.
It's the ASA online.
They have an online presence.
Well, we hold our own perspective.
It's a broad umbrella. We're specifically focused on looking at evolutionary creation. So that's from a science standpoint, that's our piece. So, but we're trying to say that, but the bigger issue is, it overlaps very much with ASA in the general compatibility of particular science with biblical faith.
He was the founder of our foundation, actually. It was founded by Collins after he received a lot of questions after posting The Language of God. And he received so many questions, in fact, he felt like he needed some sort of online place to answer them and to move the discussion forward. So it was founded by Dr. Collins in 2009. I think we lean towards it, but I think our real goal on the website is to encourage discussion about the viewpoints. We're not trying to convert people to one place or the other, but we want people to have a place to discuss their views and to kind of move the discussion forward and hopefully benefit the church in the process.
A quick comment on the relationship between BioLogos and ASA. I've had the pleasure of working with both organizations, and what I've noticed, the strength of BioLogos is our website. We are the electronic presence. I work concurrently, so I guess that's what we is.
There you go.
The electronic presence where people can learn and engage on these issues that all of us in ASA really care about. I mean, we've had great success in BioLogos that way. What BioLogos does not have much going on in the sense that we're not a competitor for ASA. ASA's strength really is its active community of people that get to know each other, can shake hands, hug, have conversations. The real face-to-face interaction, I think, is ASA's greatest strength, is the actual real... So one thing is the online community, there's actual real community. BioLogos, even its staff, this is differentiated almost in ether, okay? Mark and I have to make trips out here to actually get time with our tech gurus to figure out how we're going to make things happen. ASA's strength is the people, and what I've been encouraging since I've been involved in ASA since 2009 is play to your strengths, develop those local communities. That conversation we had last time about local chapters, I think that is the direction to go. If ASA actually has a physical presence in cities throughout the country, that's where the future of ASA lies, where people say, I'm going to get to know somebody else in my field who is a Christian. Biologos can't help you make contact with actual people. It gives you stuff online. ASA, I think ideally, should build friendships with other Christians in scientific fields in your town. I think that would be the place to go. And in that sense, these are very complementary organizations, and in no sense are they competitive. They can only help each other.
I'd like to comment from the other side. As the ASA, my biggest frustration is with our members who don't know about our site. You, please take the time to explore it. You might learn something.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much. It was a great presentation.
Thank you.